Golf Smarter number 200.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
It's the Golf Smarter Party, live with Jesse Ortiz.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
To the Golf Smarter audience, thank you very much for joining us. To everyone here, thank you very much for joining us. Today is the day after the President's Cup, and next week's show will be about the President's Cup, because I was out there on Sunday with my recorder and got a bunch of recording. I talked to a bunch of people behind the ropes and people who were walking around, and just gave my impressions of what it's like to be at a golf tournament live. And so we'll hear the show next week. But today we beat the weather. Boy, just in time. I did not know it was going to be miserable weather, but we made it. There was no rain, no spritz, nothing. It went well all day long. And we had a great round of golf today. And everybody who joined us, thank you very much. And our special guests today, we had two special guests. Adam Eisner, head teaching professional at Peacock Gap, joined us. And actually, who played with Adam? I want to ask you. Okay, Ken and Paul and Gary. Gary's outside. All right. So I wanted to come over and ask you guys, how was it playing with Adam, and did he give you anything that you could use, and was it helpful?
It was very nerve-wracking, I have to say, having somebody watch you. This is my first lesson, but he did tell me to stop doing a forward press with my body, and it turned out really well.
Really? Now, you've had lessons before on the range?
Never
even had a lesson.
So
your first experience is having a lesson on the course.
Yeah.
Nerve-wracking to start, but did it get easier as it went along, and he was helpful?
Absolutely, yeah.
Awesome.
He was really good. He wasn't trying to fix everything at once. He just said, try this, and then it worked.
Great. And Paul, you got to play with Adam as well, and how did that go?
He was really great. Just kind of watched us for maybe 6 or 7 holes, and then he would just say, you know, try this. And he tweaked my setup a little bit, and I
cool.
was having a little challenge out there, and after he fixed me, I was doing pretty well.
Awesome. Awesome. But our special guest today, of course, was Jesse Ortiz of Bobby Jones Golf, and played with everybody. How was your round?
Not bad. A lot of rust, but not bad. And this isn't a golf course to try to find your short game. You know, if you don't bring a short game here, it's a long day. So, you know, I had some really, really good holes. The guys will tell you I had some great holes, and then I had some that were
like
very, very embarrassing, very humbling, very humbling. But it was a good day.
But you've played this course, but it's been a while.
At least 30 years. Yeah, it was in a former life. I was a kid when I was here last, yeah.
And so it's been a while.
Long time.
And it's been 30 years since you've played last, right?
It seems like. it seems like. And, you know, I was raised in the city, so I played most of my golf there at Lincoln, Presidio, Harding. And then once in a while down at Sharp Park, but it was always a thrill as a kid to cross the Golden Gate Bridge, because it was always damp and cold over there. And when you'd cross here, you know, we'd either come here or we'd go to Indian Valley or San Geronimo, and the temperature was at least 20 degrees warmer over here. It was like, wow, we're playing in the country, and look, the sun's out. I mean, it was unusual to play with the sun. Normally, it was always overcast, like it was this week at the President's Cup. So I've always enjoyed playing golf in Marin. It always felt like I was, you know, really far away.
On vacation.
On vacation.
So you got to go out, and you played with, who did you play with? Aaron and Mike
and Rich. Rich.
And so how is that for you to go out? I mean, you don't get to play much generally. I'm sure when you go out, you're going out with friends and things like that. But to go out with some people, you know, you don't know, but are looking to you to, you know, talk to you about equipment and stuff, and you get to see how they're swinging. To being out there with consumers, what's that like for you?
Well, it's we didn't talk a lot about equipment out there. We were
really?
All talking about
guys,
all kinds of all
right,
kinds
well,
of other
why you were
stuff.
Here.
No, we talked about all kinds of things, life, all kinds of things. I mean, the equipment thing is like, especially after they saw me hit a few shots, it was like they're kind of, you know, we better leave him alone. Better get some other type of clubs. But no, it's fun. I enjoy getting out and playing with you know, strangers, because at the end of 18 holes, you're no longer a stranger, you're a friend, and we can all recall shots that we've made during the round that we're going to remember for many, many years. So it's always enjoyable. There's a lot of pressure, because when people find out who I am, they have high expectations.
Yeah.
And I go out, and I know I'm realistic, and I know that I'm not a very good golfer anymore, so it can be humbling and a little bit embarrassing. But I think I try to have fun right at the beginning to put everyone at ease, and then it doesn't matter how well you hit the ball or how you score. It's all about having fun.
I won't ask you to divulge, but did you keep score?
Yes, we did. I had an 81.
Did you really?
Yeah, which isn't all that bad.
I took a double on the last hole.
If I had parred, I would have broken 80, which is pretty good for me.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty good for me. I'm pretty rusty.
No, you're not.
They'll 81. Tell you.
81. And I know Derek, right? 3 over for today?
Wow.
Nice.
Great round.
Nice try. Anybody do better? No, wait, Derek. Nicely done. Anybody else get in the 70s? Right. No.
Close. On the
close.
At the end of 14, yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly. And then we have 80s and 90s. So that was the rest. We're going to just keep it there. I'll keep it in the 80s and 90s. Well, let's talk about equipment. I think that everyone's really curious to hear what you have to say about equipment and stuff. The rain is starting now. Isn't that nice? It really cooperated. We got to eat and everything. We're looking outside.
We need the rain.
We do need.
And they say it's going to be, what, about 5-6 inches in the next
24 hours. Wow. It's going to be nuts. It's going to be heavy. But let's talk about equipment. There's a lot going on with equipment right now. There are a lot of changes, the development moving very fast. You and I have had these conversations, but there's some things that I wanted to talk to you about. And I want to start with the wedges. And thanks for bringing out clubs today and letting people hit.
Oh, no problem.
I hope everyone got a chance to hit some of the clubs and learn some things and have Jesse watch you hit. I hope that you end up buying some clubs from Bobby Jones Golf. We all would appreciate that. But I want to talk to you about the groove ruling that's going on, because USGA will never make different rules for the tour and for normal players. Never happened, but it seems like that there's something going on right now. The USGA has made a new set of rules about wedges.
Yeah.
Can you help define it?
Well, there's a lot of confusion out there, and even the manufacturers are confused. I see a lot of statements coming out from different peers, you know, different manufacturers out there, and everyone's got kind of a different take. But to simplify it, see if I can simplify this here, Fred, is that next year the tours all over the world, the professional tours and all the top amateur events, if you're playing in the USGA, if you're playing in the USAM, the US Mid-Am, all these kinds of, you know, super high-end tournaments, you are going to have to use wedges. Actually, what becomes more confusing, it's any club that has 25 degrees or more loft. Everyone's been focusing on the wedges because that's where most golfers are going to see the big difference in how the ball sticks on the green. But it's clubs over 25 degrees. So for most people, that's about a 5-iron mm-hmm. and up is going to have either V grooves or a modified U with duller edges. So you're going to get a lot less spin, and which means that when the ball goes hits the green, it's going to release and run a lot more than what's happening right now. What's interesting is that for the first time ever, the USGA has mandated the manufacturers to stop manufacturing square grooves with sharp edges by the end of next year. So a year from now, we're all going to be winding down our manufacturing of box groove wedges. So you won't be able to buy square groove wedges after, about a year and 2 months from now. So if you're playing with your buddies and you say, hey, I'm going to wait till next year to buy some wedges, you're going to be at a huge disadvantage, because if they're buying something now, it'll be square groove. By the end of next year, there won't be any square grooves on the market. So you'll have to use V, and you're going to be at a big disadvantage because your partners or your the pigeons you play with on the weekends, they will be able to use – they'll have square grooves, and if you wait till the end of next year to buy something, they'll be off the market. So you're going to be at a big disadvantage for many years to come. So that's kind of – I don't know if I confused people or not, but the tour has to go to V-grooves or modified U grooves that are spaced apart and dull. But all the rest of us have another year to buy square grooves, and we can use them until 2024. I mean, that seems like it's, you know, oh, man, 2024, that's forever from now. But, you know, one of the things, one of the advantages that my wedges have, and I don't want to get into this big huckster deal because I feel...
No, do it. come on.
I'm not sure. These are my wedges.
No, come on. These are my wedges.
You know, if you're going to... The only wedges on the market now that will last you many years of play are my wedges that I did with Dave Peltz, because it's got a special insert of a super tough steel that the grooves and the texture is all milled in. So they'll last you for years and years, and you'll get top spin performance. All the other wedges on the market now, yeah, you can go out and buy some square grooves now, but they're made out of one piece, and it's soft stain, either soft stainless or it's a soft carbon steel. And they feel great, but the softer the metal, the quicker the faces wear out. So, you know, the guys on the tour, the pros on the tour, they change, most of them change once a month. Some of them change every other week. Guys like Mickelson and Vijay, who are Pell's disciples, have, you know, gotten it into their minds that, hey, if I don't have sharp grooves, I'm not going to be able to stick the ball. So they change about every 2 weeks. But the average golfer, they don't get their wedges for free. So you have to pay for them. So the guys on tour, it doesn't matter. They get new wedges every month or whatever, is no problem. But the average golfer should really think hard, A, about getting new square grooves sometime in the next 6 to 8 months. You got to do it. Your game, you know, a lot of people say, I've been around the country with Pels, with Dave, and a lot of people say, well, I'm not that good a player. I really can't tell if I'm going to, the difference between square and V. I guarantee you that if you are someone who's breaking about 100 or so around the greens with your chip shots and maybe 50 yards in, you will notice the difference between V grooves and sharp box grooves. So,
and that difference is the ball releasing or not coming back.
The ball. For most guys, we don't really hit down hard enough where you see it at the President's Cup, where the guys go boom, boom, and it comes right back. But what we do is we'll hit it, and it'll hit, kind of check, and then roll softly a little bit. I'm talking about when you get V grooves, and especially out of a little bit of the rough. Sometimes we all know when you hit a flyer, you kind of hit it out, and man, it goes a little further, and it bounces, and it goes off to the back of the green. That is going to be more of a normal shot with just normal V grooves. So everyone should really invest in a wedge set sometime in the next 6 to 8 months. And it you know, like I said, mine are the only ones out there that'll last you for many years. You can buy something. You can go out and buy, you know, 3 or 4 Vokies or 3 or 4 Cleveland wedges and stockpile them and keep them, or you can buy one of mine and it'll last for years.
Well, you shouldn't buy 3 or 4 because the way the technology keeps changing, that by the time you wear one out, you're going to have to buy another one anyway, right?
Well, but see, wedge technology hasn't changed much in 50 years. You know, I really think that if you take a look at the wedges of today and the wedges of 30, 40 years ago, they're pretty much the same. You know, yes, some of them are cavity back, but if you put the cavity backs aside and just take a look at all the classic muscle back wedges that are on the market, which are the most popular ones out there, there really hasn't been a major improvement in technology from 40 or 50 years ago. They're all classic looking shapes. The only thing that's different now is everyone's milling the faces, or they're milling the score lines in, so you can get a perfect box groove. I think Cleveland calls them zip grooves, and Vokey calls them spin milled. You know, and that is more of a precision milled face, precision milled score lines that are you know, that's very important. We were the first ones to do that 10 years ago when I hooked up with Pels when I was at Orlemar back in 2001. We were the first guys to put to mill the faces and the grooves in wedges. I remember at the Orlando show in 2001, I had all the other manufacturers in my booth. All of them. All the guys were in there checking the faces, looking at the clubs. And 18 months later, you know, my competitors came out with milled grooves. So, you know, a lot of times I say that even though I'm a small, relatively unknown guy in the industry, the big guys look at me and sometimes I feel like I'm their R&D center. Because whenever I come out with something, it's a couple years later. And
so some of them spend millions in R&D and some of them just take you out to dinner.
Yeah, I'd settle for a dinner. That'd be great. That'd be great.
Well, there's a lot of confusion on what this is all about, but I'm really surprised because I've been trying to follow this as best as I can, but I'm really surprised to hear that it's like five iron up. All I ever heard about was wedges, 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 but now you're saying pretty much all your irons, because like right now, I'm not carrying a four iron, a three iron anymore. Now I've got my hybrids. So my first iron is a five, and then I'm carrying four wedges with me. But also you were talking about nothing's changed in 50 years, but is carrying that many wedges, isn't that a change? Didn't 50 years ago they weren't carrying all those different lofted
wedges?
Well, yeah,
that's right. I mean, it 40 years ago it was only a sand iron. You had to fan the blade open, but then that changes the bounce.
Right.
And, you know, now there are a lot more lofts available. And, you know, Pels was one of the first guys, if not the first guy, to turn the pros on to 60-degree wedges. I think his first guy was Tom Kite, who was making a big deal on tour, big splash on tour when he was hitting these great wedge shots from around the green, and everyone found out that he had a 60-degree wedge. So, you know, I go around the country with Dave, and he's fond of saying that the poorer player you are, the more reason you should carry more wedges, because that's where you throw all your strokes around. And the average guy... You know, I've been with them in several seminars, and there'll be someone who raises their hand and says, "Well, hey, Dave, you know, I don't really need a 60-degree wedge because I just take my 56 and I fan it open." And Dave will say, "Well, that sounds good. What's your handicap?" "Well, I'm about an 18 or something." Dave says, "Hey, take time out. At an 18, you're not good enough to hit a shot that you fan the 56-degree open and take it up to 58 or 59. You haven't practiced that shot. You don't hit a couple hundred shots like that every day to get good enough to be able to hit it consistently. I mean, if you were that good, you know, why don't? What do you do with a seven iron? If you got a seven iron from the fairway, but you really think it should be an eight, do you fan the seven iron open? No, you take an eight. Right. It's a lot easier if you're an average player to just trust the loft, take three or four wedges, learn how far each one goes when you take your hands back to about your waist high or about shoulder height, which is like his 10-30 position, which is as hard as he believes you should ever hit a wedge. He never wants you to be parallel a la John Daly. He wants you to take a wedge and take it to about a 10-30 hand position or about shoulder height. That should be your full shot. And he still believes that the best percentage, highest percentage wedge shot is where you take your hands and get them just about waist high. That's about it. And then hit down and through. And trust the loft that's on the club. Don't try to fan it open. Don't get cute. Just learn those distances. Hit down and hit through.
One of the other things you talk about, that things haven't changed a lot on the wedges, but you have made changes with your face insert and the coating that you have on the face.
Right. Well, I think we're...
Is
we're
that
really...
something that we're going to see other manufacturers taking advantage of after?
I think there's no doubt about it. In fact, I just found out that this year, this season, TaylorMade's coming out with a wedge that has a face insert. So once again, you know, I'm always, my ideas seem to be like they're a little bit out of left field, but since I'm a small manufacturer, I've really got to be ahead of the curve. I can't come out and design something and, you know, if I come out with a product and I design it and it's a dog, I can't say, gee, you know what, it's no big deal. In 6 months, I've got another club coming out. You know, I don't have the luxury that the big manufacturers do of coming out with multiple models in a year or in 18 months. I have to make clubs that really work and last at least 2 or 3 full seasons, 2 or 3 years. So I feel that I've got to design and be ahead of the curve rather than come out with something that's me too. So, you know, again, the wedges, I just felt that if I can't improve on the equipment in a certain category, then I won't get into it. So people say, well, you know, Jesse, you're known for your woods. I can see you're doing drivers. I can see you understand fairway woods. I can understand hybrids. But why wedges? And it came about because of the time that I'd spent with Pels, with Dave, and it just got my imagination going, and I realized, you know, it's why can't or why shouldn't the average golfer have the advantages that the tour pros have? They get their wedges free, so they can change wedges all the time, and they maintain face and groove integrity. But the average guy doesn't. He buys a set of wedges, and they last for many years. I mean, I saw a lot of the guys out here with wedges that the grooves you can see that are all worn off. You know, they're smooth, they're disfigured. Those wedges.
We got hands,
you know,
going up.
I mean, yeah, you know. Like, but most people say, well, you know, I love this trusty wedge. I mean, it's just so great. You know, I can do anything. Well, Dave would laugh at you and he'd say, really? Okay, here's a brand new wedge. Forget about it being mine. Just take a brand new wedge out of the shop, peel the wrapper off, take yours, and start chipping around the putting green. And you're going to see the big difference that the sharp square grooves give you versus what has been, what's worn out. The problem is most of us don't think about that because you've had the wedge so long, you just have gotten used to how the ball does not release. Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean? You're just used to the performance that your wedge is giving you. Go out and get a brand new wedge and it's gonna, you're gonna start coming up short on a lot of chips because the ball is grabbing. But once you get used to that new wedge, then you're going to leave the ball a lot closer to the pin. So just imagine if you had a wedge that would last you for years that gave you that performance instead of just 3 or 4 months.
Amazing. I want to make sure that you guys know that if you have any questions at all, please feel free to let me know. And if you want to, because that's why we're doing this, so you can ask questions as well. Anything at this point on the wedges? Because we're going to get into hybrids and hybrids and others as well. Paul.
Dave Pels said that the average golfer has a better would be better off using a lob wedge in a sand trap than a sand wedge. Should the average golfer have, say, a set of different wedges to use out of the sand that he would choose one day versus another based on the course conditions or the type of sand that's on the course? Or is that too confusing for the average golfer to have, say, one with more bounce or less bounce, that they choose on that
particular? Bounce is very important on a wedge, and there's no doubt that if you have a fluffy conditions, like out here, here at Peacock Gap, the sand traps are very fair, but it's pretty fluffy. It's pretty fluffy. You should have more bounce. A wedge that has more bounce. A lot of people think, well, if I have too much bounce and I'm in the fairway out of a tight lie, you know, I'm going to belly the ball. 9 times out of 10, for the average golfer, bounce is a friend. Bounce is a friend. If you don't have enough bounce, then you're going to, that leading edge can dig if you get your hands a little bit ahead of the face. I've been with Dave, and why he recommends a lob wedge for a lot of golfers is that most of us, when we get into the trap, what we do is we fan the blade open a little bit. So you take a 56 degree and you fan it open to probably 58 or 59 degrees. That's just normal. When you do that, you increase the bounce. Okay? But a lot of average golfers fan the blade too much and then hit down. They don't go through, they dig. So when Dave recommends a lob wedge, he's recommending it to an average golfer so that he doesn't fan the blade too much and hurt themselves. If you have a lob wedge, you already have 60 degrees. What you should then do is barely fan the blade open, hardly anything, and let the natural bounce of the 60 degree go through. Now, a lot of 60 degree wedges on the market, you see more and more now that have higher lofts. When they first came out about 12 plus years ago, the lob wedges had very little bounce, 3, 5, 7 degrees, something like that. Now you can buy lob wedges that have 10, 12, even 14 degrees, and those are ideal out of the sand trap. But the average golfer, I believe, should stay with a type of bounce that's about standard. A sand iron for them should be somewhere around 14 degrees, and I think a lob wedge for most golfers, average golfers, should be about 10 or so. That's still not a lot for the fairway. We make one that's 10, and we also make one that's 6. But the 6-degree one, really, I don't recommend it for out of the sand. You know, that's really good for pinching the ball around the fairway or in the around the rough. But, you know, there are more lob wedges today with more bounce. And, again, you don't have to fan the blade much on a 60, because if you do, then you're going to go to 62, 63, and that ball's going to stay in the trap more often than not.
I have a 47-degree pitching wedge, a 52-degree gap wedge, a 56-degree sand wedge, and a 60-degree lob wedge. Is that enough wedges for me?
No, not really. I mean, Dave and I realized that when we started making the wedges, we started at 52 degrees. And the reason for that was that most of the pitching wedges on the market were now in that 46-degree range. They used to be 50 degrees. That's where the term gap wedge came in. You know, as manufacturers, we juiced up all the wedges when we were able to go cavity back and put a lot of weight at the bottom of the blade, of the iron. So now the ball was flying higher and it was carrying a little further. Well, if you juice up, if you strengthen up the irons, you'll go a little further. And it's only physics, right? So today's 5-iron is the 3-iron from 25 years ago, 30 years ago, okay? So all the irons got juiced up. That's why there's hybrids. You know, hybrids are around because people couldn't hit their long irons. Well, you know, in the old days, a 3-iron was about 21, 22 degrees was a 3-iron. You know, now what's happening, everything got juiced up. So today's 3-iron, probably out there, there's a lot of companies making 3-irons that are around 18 degrees. That was like a 1 or a 2-iron. No one could hit a 1-iron 25, 30 years ago. What makes you think you can hit a 3-iron today? All the irons got juiced up except the sand wedge. Why? Because you need 55 or 56 degrees to get out of a sand trap. If we had taken the sand iron and juiced it to 52, you know, the handicaps, everyone's handicap would have gone way up. But what we did is we took pitching wedges and we took them from 50 down to 47, 46, even 45. So there was a gap between what was a true pitching wedge and what is the modern pitching wedge. That's why everyone should carry a 52 degrees. When I go around with Dave, he'll ask, you know, average golfers, well, you know, what do you hit from 100 yards out? And most guys will say, well, you know, from around 100 yards, I hit my sand iron. And Dave says you can't be a good golfer. If you're hitting a sand iron 100 yards, you've got to be swinging it way too hard and without much control. Your sand iron should go about 75, 80 yards, right in that area, depending on a full shot. If you're getting 100 yards, you're overswinging. So that's why we made the 52, because that's the club that goes about 95 to about 105 or so at about a nice three-quarter swing. So, 52, 56, and 60 is ideal. I carry a 64 because I'm a lousy wedge player, and I don't have any finesse. So when I get around the greens where I got to flop something, I get a little quick, and I kind of have a tendency to rush through the shot and maybe blade it. With the X wedge, I just know that I can take a half swing and go right through the ball, and it's going to let go straight up in the air and land and not go anywhere. So that's why I take a I use a couple of hybrids, and my set starts at a five, and I have just one fairway wood, and I have four wedges.
What do you mean X wedge?
64 degrees.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's 64 degrees, and you don't fan the blade open.
Okay.
And you just take it about halfway, and you swing right down through it hard, and it goes maybe 20 paces, 25.
Wow.
Now, some people, I play golf with guys that have, they have no problem doing that with a 56 degree, right, or even a 60. But, you know, a man's, like Clint Eastwood said, a man's got to know his limitations. And, and you know, my short game is bad, but it has improved tremendously by putting in the wedges and chipping and knowing that my half swing gets the ball airborne a certain distance, and then it just dies.
Well, you've got some great products, the wedges and the woods and stuff. What are you working on now?
Objection, leading.
No, it's, you know, I'm always thinking about how I can improve what I have in the line, in the lineup right now. In a couple of months, I'm going to have a set of strong lofted hybrids, 16, 18, 20, and 22, that are going to have a hosel that you can bend. You can adjust for upright or flat, or you can make them slightly open or slightly closed face. Every hybrid that's used on the tour is bent to the proper lie and face angle for the tour pros. No hybrid on the market for average golfers, recreational golfers, allows you to do that. On the tour, they have these tour vans that follow the guys like gypsies all over the country. And they have, in the tour van, they have molds that clamp the heads and allows the club makers in the tour vans to bend the hosels a bit so that they fit just right for the tour pros. Average golfers don't have that option. They go in, they say, gee, this hybrid looks pretty good. Boom, and out they go. I've designed a line of strong lofted hybrids that'll be out in a couple months that have a kind of a unique stress cut. At the bottom of the hosel, there's like a ring that's cut into the hosel so that when you bend the neck, the stress goes into the ring area and allows you to move the neck 2 or 3 degrees in every direction. And it'll be the first truly customizable hybrid on the market.
Wow. Keep
the
same shape that you
have now? Very, very, very similar. Yeah, I like that shape. Kind of that old kind of clique look from the turn of the century. The sole plate is very similar. It's very rounded. It's a little different looking. And the hosel's a little longer so that you can put the bending bar on it and bend it. And it's got a very slight offset. It's kind of the look that the pros like. They kind of like their hybrids to look a little bit more like the swan neck of an iron. So these are going to be just slightly offset. I would have brought a few of them here, but I sent them all to Golf Digest and Golf Magazine the last couple weeks. This is the time of year where they do all the testing for their hot list and for the Golf Magazine's club test. So even though you see all the results in January or February, here it is in October. I've got to give them all the clubs so they can test them in October, do all the copy in November. It's at press in December, and it's out on the magazine racks in January.
And then in January, and then end of January is the PGA show in Orlando.
That's right. That'll be the real full introduction of the new hybrids. Although we will have them on the website, we should have them up in about another 3 weeks or 4 weeks, where you can reserve some ahead of time.
Well, you know, thanks for the segue, Ken, because I wanted to talk about hybrids, and I think we can move on to the hybrids. It's amazing to see how many tour players are now looking into and playing with hybrids, which is only going to open the door to the consumer. They're going to see it and want to do it. I guess the two biggest examples in 2009 were Mickelson having that custom hybrid that he played by Callaway. What was that, back at the U.S. Open?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and then the most attention, I would think, is on hole number 18 at the PGA Championship. Wai Yang had that final shot onto the green that beat Tiger, and he was hitting a 21 degree.
No chance. No chance he pulls that shot off with a 3-iron. No way.
Why?
There's no way. Because he was in the rough. It would have been tough to out of the rough. He might have hit it that distance, but he wouldn't have gotten it as high. It would have come in hotter, and that ball would have gone all the way to the back of the green. As you saw it out of the rough, he hit that, came over the tree, boom, it stuck. That was because of the low CG that a hybrid gives you.
Wow. So that is just, if the consumer, the normal consumer, understands that, they'll say, oh, I got to get a hybrid because he did that. But they may not even understand the value of the hybrid at that moment.
Not from that standpoint, but I think most recreational golfers now, Fred, understand that, you know, they got mirrors at home. They look in the mirror and they say, hey, yeah, you really can't hit a 2-iron, right? You really can't hit a 3-iron, right? You know, everyone's honest with them. I think golfers are a lot more honest with themselves today than they were many,
oh, yeah, golfers don't have egos at all.
Well, no, they do when it comes to drivers. But I think when it comes to 1, 2, 3 irons and even 4 irons, I think most of them now realize that, you know what, I just don't have that club head speed to get a 3-iron up really high and land it soft. And out of certain conditions, even the pros can't do it. Yang, there's no way he hits a 3-iron out of the rough on the last hole and he gets it that high, let alone gets it to stick. Mm-hmm. So most golfers realize now that, hey, the whole 2 and 3 iron thing is over with. A lot of golfers are realizing that the 4-iron is worthless also to them, and they're better off with the 5-iron. I think a lot of golfers are even better off without a 5-iron, just going with the 6-iron down. And if you need, you know, if occasionally you hit a bad shot and you're under a tree, just take your hybrid that's probably a 21 degree or a 19. You play it a little bit, you know, play it off your back foot and just come down and punch it, and you'll keep it low enough to go below the branches and get yourself out there a decent distance. I think it's crazy for golfers. If you're a 15, 16 handicap and higher, you really shouldn't even have a 4-iron. You should start with 5-iron down. And if you're a 20 handicap and higher, you shouldn't even have a 5-iron. Just get a 30 or 35 degree hybrid and just take it to the range, practice with it a bit. The biggest mistake golfers make when they get hybrids, at first they usually hit them pretty well because it's kind of unusual. They're swinging within themselves. But then we're all, you know, all of us golfers, we start getting greedy. You know, you got a hybrid, you hit it pretty good. You hit it about 175 yards. Hey, I'm hitting this thing pretty good. Then you try to step on it. You try to get 185, and then it starts squirreling around. Ah, you know, this club's no good. No, you're no good. You're hitting it great. You're hitting it great at 175 yards, except the distance that a hybrid gives you. It's just like a 5-iron. You know, you're hitting a 5-iron a certain distance. You know, if you've got to hit it, you know, if you want to hit it a little less distance, you go grab your 6 or grab your 7. If you've got a 7-iron, you say, gee, I better hit it, I need a little bit more distance. Don't swing harder with the 7. Just go up, grab a 6-iron. Same thing with the hybrid. The typical hybrid should be swung 3/4, like 80%, and swing it like you're swinging a 7-iron. Come down, hit down on it, take a little bit of a divot with it down, and let the club do the work and accept the distance that hybrid gives you. You know, if you're hitting a 25 great and you want more distance, don't swing from the seat of your pants. Go out, break down, buy a 21. Get rid of that 3-iron or 4-iron in your bag. Put a 21 in there. And just take 3/4 swings, accept the distance the club gives you, and you'll really notice a huge improvement. Even if you don't hit more greens, at least you're going to be about pin high and close where you can make a decent chip. And who knows, you might get lucky and drain a 15-footer and you walk off with a par. But if you try to swing too hard with the hybrid, then what happens is you fan it and you're in big trouble.
What does Yang sacrifice? What does he pull out of his bag to make sure he's got that hybrid?
He probably doesn't have a 3-iron, or he may have a 3 but no 4 iron, and the 3 is maybe bent so that there's not quite the gap between a 3 and the 5 iron. I don't know what his bag looks like.
How many woods is he carrying besides the driver? And
he's probably carrying just one fairway wood.
Okay.
He's probably carrying a 3 wood. A lot of people don't realize that there are a lot of pros out there that carry like a 3.5 or 4 wood too, because they got all the distance in the world. What they're looking for is control off the fairway. So, you know, a little bit more loft doesn't hurt them. You know, a lot of us, you know, we're out there trying to get a 13-degree fairway wood off the deck, and, you know, we just don't play often enough, and we don't create enough clubhead speed to get a ball airborne like that.
But I'm curious, with our group here, how many of you guys are carrying a 3 iron in your bag right now? 1, 2. Okay. And how many of you carrying hybrids in your bag? 1, 2, 3, 4,
yes,
5, 6, 8, everybody.
Everyone now realizes. Now,
Ken, you carrying any hybrids in your bag?
7 wood.
A 7 wood.
Yeah, it's kind of like a hybrid. Yeah, that's that loft's.
Okay, 7 yeah. wood. But, and so no hybrids yet. And but you don't have a 3 iron?
No.
You have a 4 iron?
Yes.
You do have a 4 iron. Okay, and how many wedges are you carrying? How many clubs do you carry? Just wanted to know. We don't have to give all that anymore. Interesting. Okay.
I recommend golfers go out there, and because you ask people, hey, how do you hit your 4 iron? Well, I hit my 4 iron pretty good. Really? Let's go to the range. Hit 10 balls with your 4 iron, and then take like a 25-degree hybrid or 24-degree hybrid and hit 10 balls with those and see where the shot pattern is. And 9 out of 10 times, it's going to be tighter, more consistent with the hybrid than the 4 iron. Because the 4 iron, sometimes you're going to blade, you're going to hit it off the toe, it's going to go hot someplace. Really, a lot of people should take a look at moving the 4 iron out of the bag.
Good. Any other questions? Anybody at this point? Rich.
Filling the gap between the driver and, say, your 3 hybrid or 4 hybrid, what do you recommend if you have 1 or 2 golf club choices to do that?
Most golfers fall into the trap of just believing that they need a 3 wood and a 5 wood. But really, it depends on where you play. If the ball is sitting up, like in a lot of, there's some courses around here that have Bermuda. Out here at Peacock Gap, this is all bent, like bent grass rye. So you get tighter lies. But on Bermuda, the ball, even though it's tight, the ball is like on a spongy, it's almost like on a tee. It's set up. You can use a 3 wood. Most golfers can use about a 15-degree 3 wood out of there. But you've really got to, you know, go back to the mirror. Take a look in the mirror and say, what do I really need? Do I need to be more consistent with my fairway woods? Do I need more distance? If you need more distance, but you hit them, you're relatively consistent, then you can use a 13 or a 15 degree. For a lot of golfers, bogey golfers, golfers that are 15 handicap and higher, I like to recommend like a 3.5 or 4 wood. Because if you bust a 3 wood and then you hit that 4 wood side by side, yeah, you're probably going to get about 15 yards more with that 3 wood. But you're going to miss the 3 wood 3-4 times out of 10. Take a 4 wood, a 17 degree. It's got a little bit extra loft. It's not as lofty as a 5 wood. The length of the club is like a 5 wood, so you have a little bit more control. You swing more within yourself. You have 17 degrees, so no matter what the lie is, the ball's going to get airborne. Even if you catch it thin, you still get a pretty darn good shot. For the average golfer, I tell them, hey, forget about a 3 wood. Try like the 4 wood, and then you can move into a hybrid right after that. You know, so driver, 17 degree, and then look and see what you got with the hybrids.
Great. Anybody else got a question? All right. This is
probably got enough for 10 podcasts.
Yeah, we have a couple podcasts going here. So I mean, we could let's briefly do okay. a quick one if we can, and just because you also manufacture drivers, and there is a glut of drivers on the market. Talk about confusion in the marketplace. And a lot of manufacturers are putting out new drivers every year. Seems to be the same driver, you know, with a different name and a different color face.
Right.
What is going on with the driver market? Plus, there's companies that are like, buy our hybrid or buy a set of clubs, and we'll give you a driver at a dollar.
Well, yeah, it's because the market is tough and competition's tough. And, you know, drivers are not inexpensive. They're $300, $400, but they drive the business. The big manufacturers want to come out, several of them come out with two or three different model changes in 1 year. And believe me, there's no way that innovation or technology moves that fast. What they're trying to do is get into your pocketbook, get into your wallet. And they know that there are certain golfers out there that just have to have the latest and the greatest. So, right. Hey, if you can get that golfer twice or three times a year for $300 a pop, hey, you've taken $1,000 out of his pocket.
But this is 2009, and that's a tough thing to do.
Well, it's tough. The other thing is that the materials for drivers, they keep getting more expensive. Titanium isn't getting cheaper. Steel isn't getting cheaper. So a lot of the big manufacturers, they don't want to tell you, but the facts are that they are dumbing down the product so that they can hit a certain price point. You know, companies that had $400, $500 drivers, now they're coming out with drivers that are $299 or $249, and they're telling you that they're wonderful. Well, what's the difference between the $249 and the $400 one or the $500 one? It's usually a shaft, and then they've given you less options for waiting options, things like that. I really believe that many of the manufacturers today are making clubs. Their drivers that they're bringing out today are not better and, in fact, could be inferior to the ones that they were making 2 or 3 years ago. So just because a driver is new doesn't mean that it's new and improved. And that's why I tell everybody, don't believe any of the hype on drivers. You know, there's manufacturers that they own the tour. You know, some manufacturers just pay millions and millions of dollars to get the tour count out there. Drivers, you should, before you buy a driver, you should test it out. Try, get on a launch monitor, take a look at launch angle, look at spin rate. Forget about the brands. Go with what sounds best for you, what feels best to you, what looks best to you. Looks are very important for a driver. You can get something that's horrifically ugly and you hit it pretty well, but eventually the honeymoon ends and you get stale with the driver. And then you're going to look down and you're going to say something, oh man, this thing is ugly. I knew I shouldn't have bought it. Da, 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 da. At least if you've got something that it looks good when you put it down, And you've been able to use it. You had the honeymoon period. It was wonderful. When you get stale with it, that club still looks good. And then you go back home to the mirror and you say, you know what? It may be the Indian, not the arrow here. So I always stress, try out the drivers. Demo them all. Sound, feel, and looks are very, very important.
Wow. Anybody have any questions about hybrids, drivers? Derek, I want to make sure that we can hear your question.
It seems like we were talking about earlier that the pros have an inherent advantage because they're pros and the equipment manufacturers will bend over backwards for them. I've heard stories about how a lot of the pros' irons, they may be playing Titleist or Nike or whatever, but they actually will, say, have someone like Mura stamp them and build the irons, actually. And like, it doesn't seem like Tiger's irons actually are what they say they are, you know, the ones that we can go get. And I was just wondering if you had any insight to that, as, you know, are the pros actually getting their irons made by someone else?
There is some truth to that statement. There are about two or three very, very well-known forging houses in Japan that do the best forgings in the world. And, you know, if it comes out of the same foundry, you know, the Nike heads, I'm sure, are Nike heads, but it also helps if you've got people from another manufacturer that are actually grinding the heads, shall we say. So, they've got a lot of talented people in Japan where the top forgings come from, and the grind, you know, what Tiger uses, what all the pros on the tour are using is usually very different than what you get in the store, because all of their clubs are hand ground to their eye. I guarantee you that all the tour pros, they reject several sets before they settle on a set, or they may reject several 7 irons or 8 irons. You know, an 8 iron is always the transition iron in a set of irons. You know, you may like your 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 iron, but then the 8 iron just looks funky. You know, it's like, wow, this doesn't look like it's part of the set. So all the pros, they know exactly what they want to see, and they tell the guys at the forged houses exactly how to grind those heads. So, yeah, there's about two or three forging houses in Japan that do all the top forgings in the world. So, you know, Nike and Callaway, you know, all the companies that have forged irons made, you can pretty much bet that they're made in one of those three forged houses. And out of there, some small manufacturers are also having their stuff made.
Jesse, I demoed some of your drivers on the driving range, and I made a comment that I noticed there was a lot of bulge on your driver. And I noticed that if you go to another retail store, most of the drivers seem to be pretty flat. Are you, again, ahead of the curve, or is it just more, is it something that the too expensive for the general manufacturers to make a bulging driver?
I like to think that it's because no one who's making metal woods today has ever made a wood in their life. I mean, I am the missing link. I'm the last dinosaur. I mean, there isn't anyone in the world today making metal woods that handmade persimmon woods. They all passed on like my dad, or they've retired. And bulge and roll on the face of a club is very important because it compresses the ball better. A curved surface compresses the ball better than a flatter surface. And if you can move the weight within the club head to the rear, then what happens is you increase the gear effect. The guys that I played with today, they saw, you know, I think it was Mike who said a few times, Jesse, it's got to be the clubs, because, you know, I do hit the driver pretty well, but I have an advantage because of the bulge and roll. It does compress the ball better. And, you know, a lot of people think that, well, if you have curvature, that means if you miss the middle of it, it's going to go crooked. Well, that's, you're thinking like a bit two billiard balls hitting together. Gee, if you miss the center of the other one, it's going to go off. When a metal wood is hollow and you can slug the weight away from the middle into the rear, and the face of the club also has a little give, that bulge and roll compresses the ball, gives you a more boring flight, gives you a little more distance and more forgiveness.
I actually played with a friend today, using one of your drivers, and it looked like it could kill almost all animal species known to mankind that I've seen. I mean, so is the shape of to kind of the bulge and roll comment you're talking about, is the physical shape of the driver, is that because they've limited the 460cc, whatever that technical thing is that you know more about than I don't, is that where the technology heads for the next generation of drivers to try to increase distance for us who can't get it out there anymore?
The shape of a driver is very, very important, and there's some pretty ugly shapes out there. You know, mine's a little unusual because it's very triangular, and the reason for that, you see, there's square drivers out there. Well, a square driver is designed on the theory that if it's square, it's going to resist twist, okay? But that's good for a putter, because a putter only goes back a couple of feet, and the face is always square to the target, and the face of a putter is always perfectly flat. Once you take a swing with the driver, that the face of the driver is moving and fanning away from the target, okay? So what you want to do is create a shape that allows the head to rotate away, and then when it comes back down, it squares or moves and squares at impact. A triangular shape allows the club head to go out, fan out, and then come back and be square. A square design actually resists the twist. So what happens is when you first take it back, the club, when it goes back, it's slightly closed. And when you come back down with the square, with the square design, the face actually lags a little bit open. That's why you see a lot of square drivers that have very big hook faces. It's because they have a tendency to be fanned open at impact. By putting the weight and the at the back apex of the triangular shape that I have, it's rotating. It allows the face to fan away, and it rotates with the on the back of that triangle, the apex, and it closes at impact. So the shape, I believe, is very important.
One of the best ever, guys, Jesse Ortiz.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much. So I wanted to wrap it up there, but there's a couple things that I want to make announcement. I want to know if you have any questions for me about the podcast, about show, anything else, future episodes, ideas for shows. But I do want to say that we do have a couple of extra goodies to give away. We have a nice gift from the Golf Mart, which is a local retailer. They give a $10 gift card for you guys. So each guy will get one of those. Thank you to them. And we want to give a box of Dixon Earth golf balls to Marek for traveling the farthest from all the way from Warsaw, Poland. Thank you very much. He came in. He was in town for the President's Cup. And I'm absolutely blown away that you made time to play with us and for listening. And thank you very much. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And then we have one other prize, someone who didn't get their name picked earlier, and I apologize, but I wanted to let you guys know, if you saw me playing with my Click Gear three-wheel pull cart today, they are going to be available if you like them. They're going to be available at the Golfers Mart, and for Golf Smarter members, you get a 10% discount. So the usual price is actually $239. Non-members' price is $199, and members' price, you get it for $179, and it's also free shipping in the United States and no tax. So that's $179 delivered. And we're going to give one away, and that's going to go to the guy with the low score today because he carried his bag, and I want him to have three wheels. Derek, this is for you. Congratulations on your great score. Hopefully you're going to be walking. You're not going to have to carry your back because as you get old like us, you won't be able to carry your clubs anymore.
Thank you.
Guys, thanks again for coming.
No, thank
you. Had a great time. I hope you had a great time, Jesse.
Thank you.
You're my hero.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, the recording was all finished, but there still was another thing I wanted to tell you. I wanted to thank you very much for sticking around for this long episode, and I appreciate you staying till the end. I want to thank Ed Paplinski and his staff at Peacock Gap in San Rafael, California, for their gracious hospitality and help in planning this event. Also, I wanted to make sure that you had all the information about the Click Gear three-wheel push cart that we gave away to Golf Smarter member Derek Drish of San Francisco at the event. And if you're someone who chooses to walk the course, then you really should consider purchasing a Click Gear from the Golfers Mart at golfsmarter.com. Of course, there are other quality push carts available today, but none are as light, sturdy, and compact as the Click Gear 2.0. Personally, I love to walk the golf course, but cannot carry a bag for 18 holes and still stand up at the end of the day. I've had two-wheel and three-wheel carts, and the reason I love my Click Gear is how little space it takes up in the back of my car. I'll share other features that make this unit better than the rest later, but once you get your clubs, your shoes, and all the other stuff in the trunk of the car, there's really not a lot of space left for the push cart. That's why I think you'll appreciate Click Gear for its brilliant design. Normally, these things are $239. Golf Smarter members in the United States can get a brand new Click Gear for only $179, and that includes tax and shipping. I'm trying to find these deals for you, folks, so please take advantage of them. Also, you can choose from six different colors. Again, this is only valid if you're shipping inside the United States. It's an exclusive deal with our distributor. They don't have the deal outside the U.S. So if you are in the United States and you like to walk your golf course, then you should be getting a Click Gear. Use the coupon code PUSHME when clicking out to take advantage of the great deal and get it for only $179 for Golf Smarter members. Again, the coupon code is PUSHME. We close with a famous quote that was heard on the course at Peacock Gap during our Golf Smarter President's Cup podcast party. Hey, let's just keep this person anonymous, but when asked how he got a 9 on the par 4, he said, "I missed the putt for an 8. Next week, the sights and sounds you didn't see from Sunday at the President's Cup. If you have any questions, quotes, or comments, please let me hear from you. Our toll-free Google voice line is 415-448-6788. Or click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.